We are SC Podcast for Tuesday, October 21st. Gary Pasquitz joined, as always, by Jeremy Hogan, Mike Lamb. And, guys, the Trojans coming off a pretty dominant victory on Saturday against a Colorado team that probably is a little undermanned right now in dealing with the Pac-12 Conference. But that is the kind of game that the Trojans should go out and throw seven touchdown passes, have two running backs at 100 yards, two receivers at 100 yards, the kind of game that you get well, so to say, against an opponent like that. Mike Lamb, I'm sure you guys had a couple games like that in your day.
I can remember those games, and I loved them early on in my career because it meant I got in that game. So it's kind of a funny thing when you've been struggling with it that the Trojans have, and you've had those nail biters. And I don't think there is time for somebody to take a breath or somebody to get a look or do something. So I really thought it was an opportunity for USC to gather itself and in the midpoint of the season and kind of take it where they are, reassess what's happening, look at some of their players. And the one thing I thought that they accomplished was Steve Sarkisian talked a lot about the fact that they wanted to throw the ball down the field, and they did it. And the difference in this game, in my estimation, was the balls that were thrown down were caught by the receivers and not dropped by the receivers. And I would hope, if I was Steve Sarkisian or if I was Cody Kessler, that is kind of the harbinger of things to come for the offense for the Trojans.
Yeah, Jeremy, a lot of people are talking about that. Was this the breakout game for the offense of the Trojans for that exact thing that Mike just mentioned? What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, as an analyst, as an outsider, you sit there and you watch that game and you sort of can almost be a little dismissive and say, okay, it's Colorado. I mean, in essence, it was like a full-scale game against your scout team, and you're supposed to execute like that. So at the end of the day, it doesn't really mean that much. But I can tell you, if you're on that team and you're in that locker room and you're on that coaching staff, hey, it's another Pac-12 game, and it's an opportunity to go out and sort of shake off a lot of the things that have been plaguing the team. True, it's against lesser competition, but still, you get the opportunity to go out there and have a clean performance, have a sharp performance, be crisp, be, get your blocking schemes right, get some assignments right. There's things that they didn't do well, and they'll come in the next day on film and watch that and clean up. But, man, it's a good feeling when you get a game like that, and it matters to a team. And so as fans and as analysts, you can look at it and sort of dismiss it a little bit. But those are great games to have, and they're confidence-building games. And like Mike said, it was very, very clear that they were saying, hey, this is our opportunity to really work on some things, the most notable being that downfield passing game. And clearly they were going to keep trying that until it worked. And fortunately it started working early and often in that game. And again, it builds confidence. Guys are making catches. They're not dropping balls. They're running the right routes. They get on the same page. You just got to hope, if you're this coaching staff, that momentum sort of carries you over, because the next few, especially these next two on the road, not going to be like Saturday.
Let's go ahead and transition to that, to this coming game against Utah. I like what you said, Jeremy, in terms of this isn't a team that has been blowing people out or rolling to good victories. So Colorado or no Colorado, a feel-good game where a lot of things go right, there is a lot of value to that, especially you're going to be going on the road against a Utah team that is going to provide a stiff enough test. You look at some of these numbers that Utah has put up, they're 1 point away from being an undefeated football team. They have wins on the road at UCLA and Michigan, and you can judge what a Michigan win is worth these days, but you went to the big house and won. They are doing some really good stuff on defense, leading the nation in sacks and tackles for losses. You look at them on special teams, they're first in the Pac-12 in punting, field goals, special team scoring, and punt returns. This team has a lot going for it. Well, what I want to focus on right now is I want to look at the matchup on the USC O-line going against this strong Utah front. Like we said, tops in the nation with 5.5 sacks a game, tackles for loss. They're going to be getting after Cody Kessler a lot. Steve Sarkisian said this is their MO, is pressuring the passer. How do you see this O-line right now where they are at, Mike, and how they're ready for this test?
I don't know what exactly could be a tougher test for them. As I think about Nate Orchard and where he is at in the grand scheme of being able to come up with big plays. He's probably the best pass rusher that I've seen in college football this year. The fact that they do a lot of stunts, they do a lot of things. This is exactly what you don't want to see if you've got a young offensive line. This is because they've got a couple ways to attack you. I mean, they physically can come after you, and they've got guys that can bull rush you, and, you know, they don't have to do anything too fancy, and they can collapse that pocket and get to the quarterback because they get pressure up the middle and Orchard off the end. And then the other part, as I've watched them, you know, the stunts that they run, and they did it against UCLA quite a bit. I mean, they really, really flustered the offensive line for UCLA, and I would imagine you would see the same type of things. So, you know, how do you counter that? Maybe you roll the pocket a little bit. You know, maybe there's, you know, different protections that you're, you know, trying to make simple and slide things over. But it is the biggest point of concern in this game. You talked about it. Utah is a complete team in all three phases of what they try to do, and you alluded to special teams, which they are outstanding at. But the scariest part of looking at that team and previewing them is what you just brought up. How is the offensive line of USC going to handle that? And it's going to be their toughest test of the season.
I'll turn it around, Mike, and say that, and I'm in agreement with everything you're saying. You know, as much as we had this nice scrimmage on Saturday and put up a lot of passing yards, I think this is a Trojan team that's going to have to go in there and try to run the ball. And, you know, I think if there is a weakness in Utah's defense, and they're not, they're a complete defense, they're a mature, seasoned team with a head coach who's a defensive coach, and they are coming after you very, very aggressively. But I think, you know, the size and strength of this offensive line with Buck Allen at tailback, I think USC's got to be thinking about getting off the ball hard, knocking these guys on their heels, wearing them down a little bit with that physical dominant run game, and then using the play action and other things to get the ball downfield with the passing game. But, hey, make no mistake about it. I mean, you see that Utah team. And that Michigan game, that wasn't just, going into Ann Arbor against a bad Michigan team. That was on the road and absolutely kicking their butt. UCLA, 10 sacks against Brett Hundley, who's a hard guy to sack. I mean, he's given up a lot of sacks, but he's mobile, moves around. I mean, Cody Kessler's going to be a sitting duck if we think we're going to sit back there and drop back with behind our offensive line as much as they've improved and just be a drop-back passing team. I think I expect us, let's put it that way, to really, you know, try to emphasize the run game from the opening snap on Saturday and try to get Utah's defense a little bit on its heels.
Guys, let me throw a couple numbers at you from Buck right now. 1,043 yards from scrimmage, total yards from scrimmage, that leads all running backs in the nation. He has 9 plays of 30 yards or more. That, again, leads all running backs in the nation. You're starting to see a guy who's starting to creep into the Heisman Trophy discussion. 10 of his last 13 games have been 100-yard rushing performances. Over the last year, from the midpoint of last season, you can argue he's put up been as productive as any running back in the nation. So I agree with you, Jeremy. I look at this game, and I think that's the key. Sarkisian talked about it and said, hey, we're running the ball well. Our short-to-intermediate passing game is strong. Now if we can add the downfield throwing, we really become tough to stop in terms of having to defend the entire field. But talk about that with Buck, and Mike, go ahead and start us off. You've been, you know, crowing about Buck all year. How is this going to be a good game for him to really get it going?
And Jeremy says that I have a man crush or a love fest or something.
Sure.
And I don't think Jeremy's inaccurate. And from the
I think, Mike, I just left you. Don't you have your 37 jersey on right now as we're talking?
I sleep in it at night. You know, the first time I saw him play, there was just something I liked about him and the way that, you know, he sees things and the way that he keeps his body physically. So I think mentally he gets it. He's a very competitive cat. I like the way he blocks. You know, he does so many things. And then when you run the football, he gets to the hole and he does it quickly. And then he can do things from there. I think he's added that with the experience. And you talk about those numbers that are pretty gaudy. You know, understand, he hasn't taken every snap, you know, the way that some running backs have in the past. And you know, to make the point at the beginning of the season, I compared him and I said, you know, give me him or Todd Gurley and I will take him. Well, you know, if you're Todd Gurley, you're not even playing right now. So, you know, what Buck has done, not only by the fact that the statement that he has made on the field and the fact that he's kind of been the quiet leader, and I think that he has probably helped to pull that offense together. I agree with Jeremy's assessment. You've got to run the football. You've got a guy like that. If you're going to beat Utah, he's going to be critical, and it may be some old-school throwback USC football.
That's what everybody on this phone call loves, running the ball with Buck Allen. Think about it, 150 carries. This guy's averaging 6 yards a pop. When you're a bell cow back, and I think it's an important point you make, Mike, that he's not, you know, a clear, dominant number one rusher. You are alternating somewhat with Justin Davis in there. It kind of makes what Buck is doing all the more impressive.
And you're doing it behind an offensive line that, you know, we say it almost every week on this podcast. They're growing up and they're getting mature and they're getting better. But, you know, who thought that we'd be doing this with true freshmen starting on our offensive line, another sophomore, you know, a bunch of other young, inexperienced guys that, you know, in many cases aren't giving him the type of running opportunities. I mean, definitely there are times where they make a hole and he exploits it. But there's so many yards he's gotten this season on his own, creating his own stuff. I mean, he is, you know, we say it every week, he's the MVP of the team. The question is he the MVP of the conference? And then the question is he even more than that?
And let me build on that real quick, Jeremy. You know, the point that is being made there is there have been blocks that have been outright missed. And so when Jeremy talks about, you know, a hole being there, that's great. But there have been times when stuff has just absolutely been blown and missed, and he's made stuff happen. And he's done that more than I can recall any other back in the last 5-10 years of watching college football make something out of nothing, because he's had to do it 6, 7, 8 times a game. And I don't want people to lose sight of that. That, to me, is the most incredible thing he's done this year.
I was talking to John Jackson yesterday, and we were just going over some stuff and talking about how Utah is adept right now at stopping the run. But he made the point, he goes, hey, look back at what they've had earlier. He goes, they have not faced a Buck Allen yet. So that goes right in line with what you guys are saying, you know, what their defense is going to be able to do. But let's flip the ball over and look at the SC defense against the Utah offense. Utah runs the ball as well. Devontae Booker, 223 yards last week, 3 touchdowns. This is what they do. So you're going to see the running ball. But what I think is interesting is Utah is not very efficient passing the football. And so that has been one thing for SC, that they've been a little vulnerable in the secondary. I don't know if that's going to be as much of the case this week, although they alternate quarterbacks, and one of the quarterbacks is good at the read option. But I think this is going to be a whole lot of Booker in this game. How do you guys think the USC defensive front is playing right now? Go ahead, Jeremy, you start.
Well, again, I think it's a little bit of strength on strength because, I mean, you sort of said it. It's not like that they're the great passing team, and, you know, they've made the change of quarterback. They're going with more of the run-oriented quarterback. You know, they'll try to take some shots in the passing game, but clearly, you know, they're running a spread, running option offense. You know, we had one game, Boston College, where we decided to not play assignment football and let a team run up and down the field on us. But we haven't seen that in the rest of our games. The strength of our Trojan defense is obviously stopping the run. If we play assignment football, if we are where we're supposed to be, I expect our guys up front to stop these guys. And I expect them to not get a lot of points. I don't expect it to be a really high-scoring game. So I think strength on strength there. I will say this. You know, as much as I say that, you know, I hope a lot of people watch that Utah-UCLA game. You know, UCLA had that game. They go down and take the lead. And Utah, after trailing most of the game, Utah gets the ball. They made no mistake about what they were going to do, hand it off to Booker time and time again. And UCLA absolutely could not stop it. It was 5-6 yards a pop, straight down their throats, march down the field, kick a field goal, win the game. When UCLA absolutely knew what was coming. You know, if that happens on Saturday, we're in trouble, but I don't expect that. I expect the strength of that Trojan front against the run. That's, you know, just like we said, we've got to run the ball on the offensive side of the ball. Utah's thinking the same thing. We've got to step us to running game, and if USC can stop it, you know, we're in for a good evening.
Well, Kendall Thompson is the type of quarterback that can attack you by running it, and he understands zone read. He understands what he needs to do in that. And so when Jeremy loses the Boston College game, and what a complete breakdown there was trying to stop that type of a quarterback, I think there is reason for concern. And you do have to address that. And as Jeremy says, assignment football, and it really is kind of simple. You know, and I've always thought, just tackle the quarterback and make him pay, and then let somebody else go and do it. And, you know, don't try to act like you're going to tackle him and then think maybe, you know, it just doesn't work. You've got to maintain how aggressive you are. So for the Trojans, I think it's critical to address that because it has been a weak spot for them. As far as the things that have happened in the secondary, as far as some of the other things that have happened throughout the year, nothing has been as glaring as that, you know, in my estimation. So if that's what Utah wants to do and that's how they want to come and attack the Trojans, are they going to be better prepared and are they going to be a team that has learned their lesson? I would assume that that's going to be the case. But the other thing about Utah is now they've got a chance. They can do a couple of things here. They've got two quarterbacks that have played. They can give you a couple of different looks. And I know defensively, that's always the toughest thing to try to prepare for. Well, what if they do this? What if they bring in another guy? And that's not without precedent in the Pac-12. You know, that's been going on for a while. And I'm just thinking back at, you know, some of the Arizona teams that were doing that, you know, when Jeremy was playing. So that, to me, is going to be the test. Be ready for everything and don't make the mistakes you made against Boston College.
Let me throw out two things in that regard. I'm going to wonder how much the experience now with Sua Cravens, when we played Boston College, that was his third game, actually, really, you know, playing closer. He has obviously matured in that role, and you see him a lot more comfortable. But I thought this last game against Colorado, we saw two guys, Greg Townsend and Cody Temple, guys who hadn't really been able to provide much depth earlier in the year. They both got a lot of reps against Colorado. Townsend had a couple tackles for losses, a sack. I thought both of them, you know, did not embarrass themselves out there at the very least. How much does it benefit to get a couple extra bodies on that defensive line and then also having a guy like Sua back there? Mike, go ahead and start it off.
Well, I want to address Sua first. And to me, he's a hybrid of two players that I've loved watching at USC. And one everybody's going to know is Troy Polamalu. And it's because he seems to be able to get in a place to make plays. And when he gets the opportunity, he makes them. And I think that's part of the difference. The other one is one of Jeremy's teammates, Sammy Knight. And I remember Sammy was so fanatical about preparing and doing video work and understanding the opponent. And that's what I see from Sua. You know, you don't get in that position without knowing something about your opponent. And then the fact that he can finish it, and I just love that about him. And I thought the interception early in the Colorado game kind of set the tone, and everybody built upon that. As far as having some depth at defensive line, we all know. You played Arizona, what, they have 70 passing plays or what ridiculous deal it was. You can't keep going as a defensive lineman and do that. So if they have got some players now that as young players have come along, understand, are in a place that they can be adequate, and that really, that's all you're really asking for, be adequate, not have a drop-off, then that really bodes well for what USC can do when they move into the heart of their schedule.
Yeah, I would Jeremy? Just add that. I just add solely to the Sua comment and say that I really agree with Mike. And if you remember, you know, yeah, Sua was playing a little bit of a hybrid role, sometimes up to the line of scrimmage, but it was really after the Boston College game where a couple guys were not on the field as much, and all of a sudden Sua was sort of in that hybrid line, outside linebacker type role. And I think a lot of that was adjusting for these spread option type teams that we've faced in the weeks since and that we'll face in the weeks to come, because he is so adept at being able to come aggressively off the edge and make plays in the run game, but also drop back and make plays in the pass game, as we saw on Saturday. I think his flexibility and him being, and he's the only guy on our roster that I think is in that position and could do that, is incredibly valuable. I think is really a market change for our entire defense versus where we were at Boston College. I expect him to, you know, be absolutely instrumental on Saturday against Utah.
What I loved is that he was pissed that he didn't score that interception. He wanted to take that one to the house. So love that attitude. I want to talk one final thing here on the defense, and that is Gerald Bowman seems to be a guy who he's healthy for the first time in his career. And we're really starting to see, as we get into the middle of the season, him become a real leader in the secondary. And I thought, you know, his play with the big hit on the Colorado receiver, not only to cover the ground that he needed to cover, because that ball was placed in a real good spot by the quarterback between the corner and the safety. He got there, and when he got there, he made a legal pop that Ronnie Lott would have been proud of. I thought, and eventually an interception for the Trojans. I thought that was a really terrific play by Gerald Bowman.
I'll just say that, you know, Mike mentioned Sammy Knight earlier, and I'm not yet comparing Gerald Bowman to Sammy Knight, but I will say, you know, I mean, Sammy Knight was a guy when he came in, I remember talking to a couple of our offensive players, wide receivers and others, and we'd talk about, okay, who are the young guys coming in? Oh, there's this kid, Sammy Knight. Sammy Knight tends to make some plays in practice. Well, what do you think about him? Oh, gosh, he's too slow. Guy can't play, you know, he'll never, you know, be a consistent starter on the field. And then, you know, oh, by the way, the NFL, what do you think? Is he going to have a chance in the NFL? Because he actually turned out to be pretty good at USC. Oh, yep. Well, no way. He's never going to play in the NFL. He's too slow. He can't run with the wide receivers of today. And everything Mike said earlier about Sammy Knight, you know, to me is why a guy like Gerald Bowman is successful, because there's a difference between a guy that can test off the charts and run a 4.3 and, you know, have all these physical attributes, but mentally is not there for the plays when the plays need to be made at the right point in the game, versus guys that really dedicate themselves to the film room and studying their opponents and looking at alignments and having having their instincts be, you know, a half second faster than other guys in terms of how they react to plays developing because they've seen it before. Those things are what separate great football players from not great football players. Sammy Knight had that. And I think, and I'm hopeful, that maybe we're starting to see Gerald Bowman have that. And when you get a couple guys, Mike knows this, either on the offensive side of the ball or the defensive side of the ball or wherever it is, that have that work ethic and mentality about preparing the right way for your opponents, and other guys can look and see that and have that rub off on them, you know, that's when you really start to get a team to gel and mature and come along. There's only so much that coaches can do. At some point, the players got to take it on themselves, put in the effort and the preparedness, and get themselves ready to play. And it seems to me like Gerald Bowman's doing that, and, you know, that's great. That's great news for the Trojans.
Well, what I would add to that is there are certain players that maybe the coaching staff didn't think they were going to count on, or, and they weren't going to be there for them. And then necessity happens out of injuries, and I think that's part of what's going on in the secondary of USC. So, all right, can you come in? Can you fill this role? Yes, you can fill the role. Then once you get the opportunity, can you advance the cause of the entire defense? And that's kind of the unusual part for a player to be able to come in and do that, but he has, kind of like when Sewell got moved and changed positions. This is what we need you to do. Come and do it. And there are certain guys that just respond to that. They're usually really good team guys. They take it, the responsibility to their unit to heart, and that's what I have seen in the secondary. So we'll see what happens, because understand something, the easy games are over, right? and nobody can make a mistake, and he's going to have to come in and take on that role. But Gary, you're right. I love that hit. The fact that he came in, did it, because there's a lot of confusion. You know, what is legal? What isn't legal? And it's hard to set the tone in the secondary. But he did that. And then Kevon Seymour comes up with the interception, and that really kind of sealed the fate for the Buffaloes.
Let's, guys, as we end this podcast, there is a bit, USC's been in the news for a lot this year, obviously, and there was another incident at the Coliseum on Saturday. I just wanted to get your thoughts about it. Lendale White had made some inflammatory tweets during the Arizona game, critical of the coaching staff, critical of Justin Wilcox. During the Colorado game, Lendale had a sideline pass, was down on the sideline. Everything was fine, was taking photos with fans, was talking to players. At some point, it went bad as he was trying to go into the locker room afterwards, and he ended up being escorted in the tunnel out of the stadium, and it has become a national story right now. We know what we know. We don't know everything about what happened, but just based on what you know, what are your thoughts on it? Jeremy, go ahead and get us started.
Oh, gosh, I mean, it just seems so unfortunate to me. I mean, Lindale is obviously, I mean, he was one of the great Trojans of all time during an unbelievable era that we had, you know, leading point scorer in the history of the university. I mean, this is a guy that you know, whether his off-the-field behavior has been perfect, it doesn't really matter to me. At the end of the day, you want to try to take those guys under your wings and solve issues before they come issues. And just, you know, to me, it's just unfortunate on all sides. I don't, you know, I know Pat Hayden well. I like Pat Hayden. I have a lot of respect for Pat Hayden. It's hard for me to, you know, say that he's not being honest about what happened from his side. They're all good people. They're all good Trojans, and you want us to all get along. It just seems to me that with the social media things that Lindale did, sort of setting himself up as being sort of a little bit of an opponent of this coaching staff, rightly or wrongly, it doesn't really matter, but sort of putting himself in that position before even coming to the game, that, you know, to me, whoever sort of knew that he was coming and getting a pass and coming down the sidelines, you know, maybe someone should have gotten out ahead of this, but, you know, hey, hindsight's 20/20. You can always second guess yourself. To me, you know, the sooner this thing gets behind us, the better. You know, my advice would be for Lindale to sign off of social media for a little bit, or at least not comment on this stuff anymore. Release a statement and have Pat Hayden release a statement that there's been a kumbaya and everybody's getting along, and put this stuff behind us.
Think before you tweet. That's my hot tip for the day. And not everybody does that. And Lindale was a great player, as you pointed out. But he's got an inflated opinion of his opinion. Because you were a great player at one time, it doesn't mean that everybody has to do what you say. I mean, yeah, you played for Pete. And yeah, you know, you were on some great teams. But you know, you've got to maintain some support and some decorum in this. And I don't think that he did maintain decorum.
It'll be interesting to see if this one does go any further. Jeremy, I thought you said it would be best if this thing wraps up as soon as possible for all involved. That's our report here for today. For Jeremy Hogan, Mike Lamb, this is Gary Paskowitz. You're listening to the We Are SC podcast.